In 2016, as part of their Watch OS 3 update, Apple included a new watch app called Breathe. It's an app designed to assist with mindfulness, meditation, and stress reduction. Throughout the day, approximately every 4 or 5 hours, the watch vibrates and reminds the wearer to breathe. If they then tap the screen, the app then steps them through a basic deep breathing technique of slowly inhaling and slowly exhaling using haptic responses and visuals on the watch screen. Now, I must admit, if you own an Apple Watch as I do, it can be a bit annoying having your watch randomly vibrate and tell you to breathe. But believe it or not, there's some good evidence that focused breathing can be good for you. Now, last year, James Nestor, a journalist, published a book titled Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art, which was the accumulation of his research interviewing many breathing experts and enthusiasts around the world, including freedivers, who explore the bounds of human lung capacity and the health benefits of breath control. In an article about the book, Anthony Kosner writes, "We inhale to bring oxygen into the body to fuel our movements and feed our brains. When we're in danger, we breathe faster, which sets off a whole chain of chemical processes that enable us to fight or take flight. Our heart rate naturally increases with each inhale and decreases with each exhale. When our breathing rate increases, the heart pumps faster to deliver the extra oxygen. The body also produces more cortisol, the stress hormone, that both increases glucose in our bloodstreams while also inhibiting dopamine and serotonin, the counterbalancing hormones that promote feelings of calm and well-being. So just as our inhale amps us up, our exhale calms us down. We can use this simple fact to great effect. When your inhale is longer than your exhale, your heart speeds up. And when your exhale is longer, it slows down. So if you're stressed at work, Nestor explains, the easiest thing you can do with breathing is to exhale more than you're inhaling. So to help capture this idea, I'd like us to do a little breathing exercise today. Now, so let's start by placing a hand on your belly, just below your ribs, and the idea is to try and breathe from this area and not from your chest. All right. So we're going to take 3 breaths, and we'll inhale slowly, and we'll count for 4, and then pause and exhale for a count of 4. Now feel free to exhale for slightly longer than we inhale. So ready? In, ready? In, 3, 4. Out, 2, 3, 4. In, 2, 3, 4. Out, 2, 3, 4. In, 2, 3, 4. Out, 2, 3, 4. Now everybody should feel relaxed, a state of peacefulness, ready to hear the rest of my exciting message. Now, a study published in 2019 looked at the effects of pace breathing, like what we just did then, on brain function. All told, the results of this study support a link between the types of breathing and activation in the brain structures involved in thinking, feeling, and behaviour. So this raises the possibility that particular breathing strategies may be used as a tool to help people to manage their thoughts, moods, and experiences. Now, I find this fascinating, an amazing part of God's creation, that in our breath, the way we breathe can help calm us, help give us focus, and give a sense of peacefulness and restfulness. So today I'd like to build on this idea and explore how the direct physical benefit of just giving attention to our breathing plays into a much deeper and broader concept of rest, of receiving rest and of giving rest. Now, perhaps the connection is not immediately apparent, so please turn with me to Exodus 31. Exodus 31. Verse 16. So God is giving Moses to tell the Israelites about the Sabbath. It says in 16, "Therefore the people of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath throughout their generation as a covenant forever. It is a sign forever between me and the people of Israel that in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed." So in the creation week that recorded in Genesis, it says simply that God rested on the seventh day. And we'll read that in a minute. So the Hebrew word for rest, used both here in Exodus and also in Genesis, literally means to cease work. But here in Exodus, God tells Moses there's something more to it than simply ceasing to work. God rested and was refreshed. The word refreshed is a translation of a Hebrew word that is used only 3 times in the Bible, 2 of them in the context of the Sabbath. And the Hebrew word is nofesh, and it means literally to breathe. To breathe. So on the very first Sabbath, God rested from his work and he breathed. He breathed in the beauty, magnificence and goodness of what he had just created, not with pride, but with the restfulness and peacefulness that comes from being in the presence of what is truly good. I like to imagine that what God did there was something like what I'm sure we've all done ourselves in the presence of nature's beauty, even if just for a moment. Whether it's standing on a beach surrounded by the sounds of crashing waves, or on top of a mountain awed by the never-ending views, or in a dense forest hushed by the gentle sounds of life, or simply stepping out into your yard on a spring morning, drawing in the scent of new growth. You find yourself standing there in nature's surround, perhaps even closing your eyes a little, breathing in deeply, slowly exhaling, breathing in deeply the salty or crisp, woody or scented air. For just a moment, your thoughts are locked on every sensory input as you strive to absorb, to feel every aspect of that moment. It is a moment of relaxation, peacefulness, and calmness. A moment of rest surrounded in the beauty of God's creation. God breathed, not because he was exhausted or tired from all his universe creating. No, rather, God breathed because he was creating his final, ultimate gift, the gift of his rest. A time of comfort, calmness, and peacefulness. A place to relax, to breathe, a place of rest. It's in these moments of rest that we can truly live. Like even in our modern English, we have expressions that link breath with rest. Expressions like, "Why don't you take a breather? I need to catch my breath. I can breathe freely again now that the finals are over. I breathed a sigh of relief to breathe new life into it. I need some breathing space, or I can breathe easy now." These are all expressions that relate breathing to the rest or things that come from resting. Things like being free of mental or physical stress, a chance to think clearly, to recharge, to refresh. It is truly a wonder, God's gift of rest. I mentioned it, but let's now read Genesis and consider that very first Sabbath rest. Now, the more I study, the more I appreciate how much the theme and pattern of the entire Bible, the purpose of God's entire plan, is laid out here in the first few pages of Genesis. This is on page 2. Genesis 2, verse 1. It says, "Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. And on the seventh day God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made." I think it's interesting to note how God sets the Sabbath up distinct from the rest of the 6 days previous. I think the Good News Bible captures it nicely. in Genesis 1, verse 5, at the end. Evening passed and morning came. That was the first day. Verse 8. Evening passed and morning came. That was the second day. And then verse 31. And God looked at everything he had made and he was very pleased. Evening passed and morning came. That was the sixth day. But when we come to the Sabbath, it says that God blessed and sanctified it because in it he rested. He made it holy, set apart, special. What it doesn't say is evening passed and morning came. That was the seventh day. And so it seemed that unlike each of God's creative acts of the physical universe, which came to a close at the end of each day, God's rest did not and does not end. Instead, it remains. And if it remains, there's something more to God's rest than simply a day, the seventh, on which to do no work. So what then is God's rest? And how should we think about this rest? If it is not just a day of the week that we do no work on. But before we dive into trying to address that question, it's worth clearing up any doubt about the idea that God's rest remains now and into the future. Hebrews 4. The whole section of this chapter is on God's rest, so we're going to read a little bit of it. In verse 3. For we who have believed entered that rest, as he has said, as I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. Although his works were finished from the foundation of the world, for he has somewhere, I love that, he has somewhere spoken of that seventh day in this way. And we just read that somewhere. And God rested on the seventh day from his works. And again in this passage he said, they shall not enter my rest. Since therefore it remains for some to enter it, those who formerly received the good news failed to enter because of disobedience. We drop down to verse 8. For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken of another day later on. So then there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his. Now there's a bit to unpack here, and however, I'd really like to just draw attention to how the author of Hebrews links the Sabbath of the rest in the creation week to a rest that they did not enter, and then to a rest that Joshua might have but didn't give to them, and then finally to a rest that is still to come. From this, we can see that there is an element of past, present, and future to God's rest. The Sabbath rest we experience each week, instigated by God at the creation of the universe, not only creates a weekly rhythm for our lives, but also pictures something much bigger than just a day to not work. What does God's rest mean for us today? And how do we partake in or contribute to this rest? Today I'd like to focus on the past and present aspects of the rest more than on the future, although this is just as relevant. Now we've covered the creation week Sabbath, so let's take a look at what is being talked about here when the author of Hebrews says, "They shall not enter my rest." It's a quote from Psalms, Psalm 95. So let's read that to find out what was this rest that they did not enter. Psalms 95. This is David writing in verse 8. Do not harden your hearts as at Meribah, as on the day at Massah in the wilderness, when your fathers put me to the test and put me to the proof, though they had seen my work. For 40 years I loathed that generation and said, they are a people who go astray in their heart, and they have not known my ways. Therefore I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. So from this we see that the promised land was a central part of God's rest. However, the generation of the Israelites that had left Egypt would not enter God's rest because they did not trust him. But what would they have experienced if they had indeed trusted God? What would have been their experience of God's rest? So for me, this is where we start to really see an aspect of God's rest that is both practical and real. But to set the scene a bit, let's read Exodus 1. No need to go there, I'll just quickly read it. Exodus 1:13. So they ruthlessly made the people of Israel work as slaves. This is in Egypt. And made their lives bitter with hard service, in mortar and brick, and in all kinds of work in the field. In all their work, they ruthlessly made them work as slaves. The Israelites were a people that had no rest, a people that had no chance to live, to breathe, a people that were working continuously. Now God heard their cry and took them on eagle's wings and brought them to himself, to the promised land, a land that they were to possess forever, a land flowing with milk and honey, the most glorious of all lands. Each tribe and each family would have their own land. They would build their own houses, plant their own crops, raise their own livestock in a land that was fertile and bountiful. From slaves who had no rest, who owned nothing, God would give them all this and more. He would give them peace and prosperity in their own land, and they would live knowing that their children and their children's children for generations to come would continue to possess this land and live in peace. God would bless them, and they would be for him a kingdom of priests, a firstborn child. This was God's promise. This was his rest, a place to breathe. He would take care of all their physical needs and provide them the means with which to flourish, to truly live, free of suffering, stress, and anxiety, the direct opposite of their slavery in Egypt. If they'd only chosen life, God would have given them this rest. And although that generation would not enter the promised land, they were all there at Mount Sinai and heard the teachings and instructions of how they as a nation would live in the land of God's rest. They learned how central rest was to the whole idea of nationhood that God was laying out before them. How living within God's rest would mean partaking in and contributing to the repeated patterns and cycles of rest woven throughout the nation's structure. So let's read a bit of these in Exodus 23. Exodus 23, verse 9. Verse 9. Also, you shall not oppress a stranger. This word stranger is an immigrant, foreigner, resident alien. So somebody who was living with them that was from another country. For you know the heart of a stranger, because you were strangers in the land of Egypt. 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its produce, but the seventh year shall let it rest and lie fallow, that the poor of your people may eat, and whatever they leave, the beasts of the field may eat. In like manner you shall do with your vineyard and your olive grove. 6 days you shall do your work, and on the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may rest, and the son of your female servant and the stranger may be refreshed. And here is the second time that norfesh is used in the context of the Sabbath, used in a way that applies to all those that experience this rest or what comes from this rest. The land, the animals, the servants, the strangers, and the poor are all given a chance to breathe, a chance to be refreshed, a chance to live. I think it's hard to imagine living in a country that had these rests built into the very fabric of its society, but it's worth trying to. Now, we know the benefits of the weekly Sabbath. We experience it ourselves, but what about the land Sabbath? Despite being a bountiful and fertile land, the Israelites still had to cultivate the land to have food on the table each day. So much of their life would have centered around their crops, tilling, sowing, reaping, threshing. And even as they harvested, they would have been making plans for the next crop, the next round of tilling. Each month would have been full of agricultural activity. In Leviticus 15, God tells the Israelites that in the sixth year, he would send his blessing and the land would produce a crop sufficient for 3 years. So it would have been a crazy busy year. And then the seventh year, nothing. No crops to plant, no soil to prepare, no vines to prune, no reaping to be done, nothing. Nothing for an entire 12 months. All agricultural activity stopped. Now, I have no problems imagining what they would have done for those 12 months. Travel across the land for an extended stay with the family, build the house the missus always wanted, catch up on a bit of fishing with the boys, get that barn finished that never got done, learn the harp, have a go at wood carving, take the kids on adventure. I could go on, but you get the point. They would have had the time to pursue all manner of pursuits. 12 months to truly live. 12 months to breathe. But it wasn't just the wealthy or even the average family who had land that got to breathe on that seventh year. Let's read it in Deuteronomy 15. Deuteronomy 15. We get so much more detail into the significance of this Sabbath rest, this Sabbath year. In verse 1. At the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a release. And this is the manner of the release. Every creditor shall release what he has lent to his neighbor. He shall not extract it of his neighbor, his brother, because the Lord's release has been proclaimed. In verse 7. If among you one of your brothers should become poor in any of your towns within your land that the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand against your poor brother. And you shall open your hand to him and lend him sufficient for his need. Whatever it may be, take care lest there be an unworthy thought in your heart, and you say, the seventh year, the year of release, is near, and your eye look grudgingly at your brother, a poor brother, and you give him nothing, and he cry to the Lord against you, and you be found guilty of sin. You shall give to him freely, and your heart shall not be grudging to give to him, because this is the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all that you undertake. For there will never cease to be poor in your land. Therefore I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy and to the poor in your land. If your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, is sold to you, he shall serve you 6 years, and on the seventh year you shall let him go free from you. And when you let him go free from you, you shall let him go, not go empty-handed. You shall furnish him liberally out of the flock, out of your threshing floor, and out of your winepress. As the Lord your God has blessed you, you shall give to him. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. Therefore, I command you this today. And so just as the land would have had rest and give them rest, so too were they to give rest to the servant, to the needy, to the poor. In that year, no longer would the poor and the needy have the burden, the stress, the anxiety of how they were to pay their debt, how they were to find food. No longer would there be a servant now, they would have rest. Just imagine if you were poor, in debt, the threat of being sold into servitude, an ever-present reality, struggling to find food, working all day reaping to the edges of the harvested land, wondering where you could go next to maybe find more food than you could eat in a short period. And then the seventh year came. Your debts, gone. The threat of years of servitude, gone. Food wherever you go, anywhere in the land. Throughout the entire country, food literally dropping in the fields there, especially for you and people like you. This land, this year, a time of comfort, calmness, and peacefulness. A place to relax, to breathe. A time of rest for every single person. And then we have the climax of this whole idea, that even more special year, in Leviticus 25. Leviticus 25, verse 8. You shall count 7 weeks of years, 7 times 7 years, so that the time of the 7 weeks of years shall give you 49 years. And then you shall sound loud trumpet on the 10th day of the 7th month. On the Day of Atonement, you shall sound the trumpet throughout all your land. And you shall consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. When each of you shall return to his property and each of you shall return to his clan, the 50th year shall be a jubilee to you. And in it you shall neither sow nor reap what grows of itself, nor gather the grapes from the undressed vines, for it is a jubilee. It shall be holy to you. You may eat the produce of the field. In this year of jubilee, each of you shall return to his property. It's hard to imagine a country like this, a country that lived like this, that practiced this pattern of rests. The ultimate year being what is described here, every 50 years, the Sabbath year of Sabbath years. The rest at this year, the year of the Jubilee, would bring to the land, to the tribes, to all the families within the tribes, as they receive back their ancestry land to once again rest in their own land. This was God's rest. A magnificent rest that addressed physical toil, suffering, anxiety, and stress that the daily grind could bring. A rest that was a shadow of God's eternal rest. A place, a time when it's not simply a day or a year, but eternity. So then how does all this, all these rests and the nature of these rests, capture the essence of God's rest? And how do we partake in and or contribute to this rest? It seems to me that the pattern of the Sabbath rest we've laid out here in Scripture shows that God's rest is an expansive idea of rest. For not only is it a ceasing of work, an antidote to exhaustion, but it is also about being able to breathe, being free from an anxious mind, free from the physical and mental burden that comes from suffering, stress, and hardship. And although work, hardship, and suffering are part of life, they are not life. Rather, life is and is at its fullest in rest, in God's rest, a place to breathe. So then if, as Hebrews says, this rest remains for us to enter, how do we enter? How do we enter? Well, Hebrews tells us that too. We read it. Verse 3. We who believe then do receive that rest which God promised. We who believe. Now, personally, I'm not a big fan of the word believe or even the word faith. And I find myself looking for translations that use a different word than these two words. For me, the word faith is too religious and belief is too filled with doubt. For me, the word that captures it best is trust. Trust. For we who have trusted are entering into that rest. Rest is found in trust. Peace, calmness, rest comes from trust in God. So easy to read, so easy to say, so simple. And yet, Christ summarized it this way in John 14, verse 1. Do not let your heart be troubled. Trust in God. Trust also in me. When God laid down the foundations of the universe, he paused and he built into the fabric of life that what would be its essence, a Sabbath rest, a place to breathe. He then wove this into even deeper patterns of life within the promised land, accumulating in what was and is and will be the very purpose of being, of existence itself, to enter his rest and to be at rest eternally forever in right relationship with him. All this is predicated on trust. So if this is how we partake in God's rest, how do we contribute to this rest? Do we even need to? We who have entered that rest through trust have a comforter, and a comfort knowing that Christ has come, has died to absorb our sin, was raised, and will once again return bringing God's eternal rest. This is the basis for an incredible inner peace, an inner self that is at rest. It seems obvious now, doesn't it? At the heart of God's rest is a giving of breath, an addressing of physical and mental stress, anxiety, and suffering. baked into every pattern of Sabbath rest that God gave the Israelites, the weekly Sabbath, the yearly Sabbath, and the Jubilee, is an addressing of their neighbor's fundamental need, a blessing from God to the people and then through the people to others who needed it most. The Sabbaths were there to be an antidote to oppression, to exploitation, to suffering, to anxiety, stress, and hardship, a place to breathe, to truly live. The whole nation, all the tribes, all the families, all the people who would enter God's rest would be people that gave rest. They gave rest when they dismantled their large estates to give back the land to the original owners, when they forgave the debts of their fellow Israelites, when they left their land alone for a year to provide food for the poor and the needy, when they gave freedom to their servants and provided them with all that they would need to start a new life. In all these things, they gave rest. All these things were part of God's Sabbaths, the giving of rest. And so as I studied this topic and thought about this nature of God's Sabbaths, I found I was compelled to ask myself a different set of questions, indeed a more personal set of questions. When was the last time I gave someone rest? When was the last time I helped someone to breathe? When did I say a word, do a deed that addressed a simple need, that gave someone peace, that freed them from a burden they carried or helped them to carry it stronger? When did I ease a worry and anxiety that was in my power to calm? When did I give comfort to someone? When did I help someone rest, give someone a moment to breathe, to truly live, even if only for a moment? Is our Sabbath experience here in this room an experience of rest, an easing of anxiousness, of stress and hardship? Is that what we bring? Do we seek to share with each other God's rest on this day of rest? Do we help each other to just breathe? To give each other a moment to forget all else and slowly inhale and slowly exhale? So let me summarize what I've tried to say today. There's an interesting aspect to our breathing that when we bring it into focus and slowly inhale and slowly exhale, repeatedly in a controlled, paced manner, that we promote feelings of calm and well-being. In the very beginning, when God created the universe, God set the Sabbath apart and rested from his work. He did not just cease his work, he also paused to breathe, signifying the calmness and peacefulness, the restfulness that he inspired the Sabbath to be. God set the Sabbath day up not just as a day to observe, but as a pattern of ever-expanding, repeated cycles that would accumulate in his final purpose for the universe itself. Woven into these patterns, these cycles were the immediate addressing of physical and emotional needs, as well as the hope and trust of a future, eternal, complete fulfillment. At the heart of God's idea of the Sabbath is the notion of rest, tied to the removal of suffering, anxiety, stress, and hardship. This is God's rest, God's promise, and it still remains to this day. It is a rest that is entered in with trust. It is not just a rest we hope for in the future, but rather it is a rest available to us right now. An inner rest, an inner peacefulness of knowing and trusting in God's eternal work. And if then we enter this rest, so much more should we share this rest and give rest to all those we interact with. To give rest is to address someone else's physical or emotional need, to lighten a burden, to give strength and support, to give someone the opportunity to breathe, to rest, to free them, if only for a moment, from suffering, anxiety, stress, and hardship. This is what the Sabbath is about. It is the pattern of our week, and it should be the pattern of our lives. Christ said it best, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke on you and learn from me, because I am gentle and humble in heart. And you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy to bear and my load is not hard to carry." As imitators of Christ, can we say the same? Is our yoke one that we welcome others to take, one that is gentle and humble in heart? Do people find rest when they come to us? Is our yoke easy for them to bear, our load easy to carry? God's rest is a place to breathe. Let us all trust, breathe, and give rest to all those that know us, to all those that meet us.